I'm an enabler. I think about all the things that the WR makes available to us. Different kinds of music that we never hear on any other radio station. Support of local events and local musicians. Think of all the talented morning DJs that I listen to every day of the week. The insights of Rob McCall, the commentary of Jim Hightower, and the Democracy Now! News. I'd hate to think that any of those voices could sometime go silent, and that's why I contribute. I'd like to say a word to some of the people on the sidelines. You know, those people who listen to WERU on a regular basis but aren't yet members. I know that times are tough, but surely you can contribute something. Just put a dollar in an envelope and send it to WERU. I'm sure they won't send it back to you. And you'll have the satisfaction that you are now part of the team. You're off the sidelines and into the game. Try it. You'll like it.
Our telephone number is 1-800-643-6273.
WERU-FM, coming to you from our studios in Orland, Maine. WERU is at 89.9 in Blue Hill, 99.9 in Bangor, and streaming worldwide at WERU.org. Thanks for listening.
And stay tuned for Power for the People.
Indeed is Power for the People. My name is Steve Kyle, your host for the next hour. This is a call-in energy radio show, and as we say every week, helping Mainers take control of their energy future, which means taking care control of your energy budget. And that is an interesting twist this week because it is Pledge Week, and it occurred to me on the way in as I made my pledge this morning that if you have taken any of the advice that you've heard on this show, it is anything that you may have done to control your energy future and budget, you've just paid for a potential donation to this radio station. And if you've taken bigger steps, you have saved way more than your typical likely donation. So think about it in that perspective, if you will, WERU is helping you save money, and so help them out a little bit. Remember, too, that the current administration has proposed to zero out the funding for public broadcasting, and so that's a part of the reason that I bumped up my donation this year. So always wonderful to follow up Mike in the Barefoot Blues Hour. Thank you for that, Mike, for keeping me entertained on the way in this morning, as you always do. Our guest today is Peter Adams, who's going to be on the phone with us from New Hampshire, and I'm going to come back to Peter in just a second. Actually, just a little bit of a foreshadow there. Peter is the founder of the Plymouth Area Renewable Energy Initiative, Plymouth, New Hampshire, which is a volunteer grassroots organization that does energy raisers, consider them like a barn raiser. And so I've invited Peter on because it's a great model for some local entities here in Maine who may want to get involved with helping kind of spread the word and get people to have installations less expensively than they could get on the retail sector. So it would be good for the less fortunate out there, something for Habitat for Humanity to consider, that sort of thing. But first, I do want to say, because we have focused on the issue of solar and net metering here a number of times on this show, because unfortunately it's become a political football, the update is that LD 1504, which was to override the PUC rule, which was supposed to begin in 2018, the governor vetoed it. That veto was sustained, unfortunately. A number of legislators didn't show up to vote. And so I guess that means at this point that the PUC rule is going to go into effect in 2018. Basically, my take on it is that it continues the uncertainty that is a bit of a negative for the solar business, but we have to remember that solar is still a really smart economic choice. In 2018, the 100% net metering credit that people have been getting will go down to about 95%, so it's a small step down. Solar still makes a ton of sense, and solar is still very competitive with utility power. So I'll leave it at that at this point. Well, I will comment, too, that there are other things that could be happening here. The Conservation Law Foundation is planning to sue the state or the PUC for the aspects of this rule, and so some of those aspects could even go away. And I certainly would think that given where solar is going worldwide, not necessarily here in Maine based on our leadership, but worldwide, certainly the next legislature or the next governor could act to settle the uncertainty. So, unfortunately, stay tuned is the best I can say there. So, Peter Adams. Peter, are you on the phone?
I think I am, yes.
Hey, you think you are, huh? Well, I'm pretty sure you are, too. Peter, great to talk to you. Full disclosure here, I used to live in New Hampshire and the Plymouth Area Renewable Energy, and Peter is a good friend of mine, and the Plymouth Area Renewable Energy actually installed solar thermal on my house in New Hampshire. And basically what that means is that Peray came in with their expertise, but it was mostly volunteer work that installed it. And so I just paid probably a wholesale price for the equipment itself. And that solar has been working there since, I'm going to guess, 2008 or 9. Something like that.
Yeah.
We were fortunate when Peray did that installation to have New Hampshire Public Broadcasting actually film it, and so there was a clip on New Hampshire Public Broadcasting's TV station for a number of years on that. I couldn't find it when I went looking for it the other day, but it was on there, and I was quoted. The reporter asked me, "So what's the payback on this thing?" And my answer was, "Well, a week from Tuesday." And the reason was that I was installing a new oil boiler and did not replace the hot water portion of that oil boiler, which cost about the same as the new installation.
Right.
Unfortunately, I did that oil boiler. I hate to admit that I did that, but it was really before cold climate heat pumps were common, and so I went with an oil boiler, which saved me 40% just by buying the new one. But
right.
I'm always... chagrined to admit that I was that I did do that with oil, because there's just no reason to do that today.
Right. So, well, there's more opportunity.
Yeah, there's certainly other options, and air source heat pumps. People on this station, on this program, have heard me say before, I put an air source heat pump into my house in Waterville and reduced my oil bill by 90%.
Right.
And
right.
It's just not hard to do. So Peter is as about as much of a solar an energy expert as I could ever hope to meet, so he's just a wealth of information. And so it's hard to know where this conversation could go, but we certainly can take calls from people about any number of issues. But I did ask Peter on to talk about the Plymouth Area Renewable Energy Initiative specifically, in terms of how it got its start and what it's done and those sorts of things, hoping that groups listening, towns or nonprofits listening. I'm a member of the Mid-Maine Sustainability Coalition in the Waterville area, and this is something that I'm thinking of proposing to them that we do as well, to just kind of get this information out there. Peter, you guys used to have a CD which kind of documented your history and talked about how to start something like this up. Is that CD still available?
That CD is still available, and it's we're contemplating putting it up online at this point. We're not in the business of trying to make money on any of this. Our mission is to just help people prepare for their energy future, very much like you said earlier, for your own motto, and get people so that they can get through, you know, an uncertain energy time that's coming. We just don't the challenge is, and I heard about your legislation, and I think that's the key word here is that we just don't know what's going to happen, and so should we not just be prepared for all of it? Shouldn't we not just be prepared for higher prices or restrained supplies or whatever? So I think stay tuned, because I think in the next couple months we're probably just going to put that, it's run its course, so we're probably just going to put it up on YouTube.
Okay.
And let people have it.
And can you give me that web?
I will definitely send it to you when we have it.
Yes. Okay, all right, that sounds
good.
But
I will also send you a CD.
Okay.
Just as soon as I get off the phone.
All right, fantastic. And I will share that with the Mid-Maine Sustainability Coalition.
Great.
And if anybody else wants to call in and ask for that, we will do what we can on there with that as well.
Great.
All right. So Peter, you are not actually in the energy business. You are in marketing and media.
Correct.
So tell me a little bit about what you do in real life, and then let's go from there into how you came to start the Renewable Energy Initiative, and you know why, who, and how, that sort of thing. But let's start with a little bit about who you are in real life.
So in real life, I have a small EVP marketing and media. It's a small boutique marketing company that does just about anything that anybody needs. Our motto is we fill your gaps. If you need social media, if you need video, if you need those type of things, we do that for you. And we've had as many as 7 people. Right now we have 3, and it's a fun business where I go around the country working with different companies on different projects. About a number. So you know, here I am sitting here doing this job, which is fruitful, and it makes me a living. And I started reading back in 2001, I believe, books by Richard Heinberg and others that outlined peak oil and what's the likely future if we were to do nothing to prepare for our energy future. And I was shocked to find out that from the top level of government down to municipalities and even individuals, no one was doing anything. It was just a happy-go-lucky, let's just use up all the oil and something else will sort of appear magically someday. And my thought pattern went to, if we use up the oil too fast and it gets to a very, very high rate or very expensive cost, all of a sudden changing to a new type of energy will be that much more expensive, way more expensive. The time to change to a new type of energy is when energy costs are low, because the shocker is that oil is in everything. Oil is in the container that goes around the outside of your iPhone. It's in your iPhone. It's in the rubber in your car. It's in the plastic in your car. It's in the fuel that flies you across the country. It's in your detergents, in agricultural fertilizers. It's in absolutely everything in our lives. And what we need to do is save oil for what oil does best, which is fly planes across the country, or in certain ways, if it's done efficiently, heat certain things, or make certain products. But anything that we can do that you don't need oil for, and we could do with solar or some other way, we should rapidly be moving in that direction to basically shore up, in a sense, our oil and natural gas. And so this was all based on the theory of peak oil, which is pretty much, if you believe in science, which some people now don't, I guess, but if you believe in science, basically there's a certain amount of oil in the ground, and we have used, or we've come close to using 50% of it, it was sat in the ground for millions and millions and millions of years. And it was captured in certain places. Other places, it filtered down into the earth, never to be grasped. But in places like Saudi Arabia and Venezuela and even Pennsylvania, pockets of it were held in the rock, and we were able to bring it out. Well, peak oil is when we get to the point of 50% of the oil that has come out, of recoverable oil, has come out of the earth. And in about 100 and some years of using oil, we have used oil at, right now we're using that at a pace of about 84 million barrels a day worldwide. The United States uses about 22 to 23 million barrels a day. And at that pace, we are depleting our supplies rather rapidly. And when we get to 50%, which is a moving target, and I'll explain that in a second, when we get to 50%, the amount of oil we can bring out of the ground diminishes. And I just as an example, if you're old enough, I think Steve, you might be. I don't know if some of your listeners are, but
no, I'm only 6 years old.
Okay. So back in the 70s, when we were at the line, the gas lines at the stations for 2 or 3 hours to get 3 or 4 gallons of gas to get us through the next day or so, that was a 5% reduction in the amount we needed. 5%. When we go over the top with peak oil, when all of a sudden we start going down the other side, after that 50%, they're estimating about 5% every year. So in the first year, you're at lines at the gas station. Second year, there's no longer any skiing. Third year, we're starting to ration to the point of of having to not have as much fuel as you need to heat your house. So that's the horror of peak oil. And we said, if we do something about this, if we start moving people in the right direction, we can move that mark. We can move that peak oil mark down 2 years, 5 years, 10 years. It is going to happen, and it's going to happen someday. But can we move that mark? And the weird thing is, Steve, that if we do everything we set out to do, we will never achieve peak oil, and people will believe it doesn't exist because it never happened.
Right.
You know, so if we can keep moving that mark down the line. But so it's one of those things that if we do our job, you will see no difference.
Right.
If we don't do our job, we believe that we're in for a pretty rocky road. So so we set up the Plymouth Area Renewable Energy Initiative. A friend of mine, Sandra Jones, I gave her the books. She had just come off of a very intense job with the state and wanted some time off, and I gave her all of about 6 days, and then thrust these books into her hands, and I said, "Read these." And she said, "I don't want to." And I said, "You're going to." And she came back to me about 10 days later and said, "We need to do something." And so we formed this not-for-profit organization with the stated goal of basically helping individuals and businesses and organizations prepare for their energy future. And so whatever that means. And, you know, you said I was an energy expert, and I believe I am an energy advocate. I am an advocate for positive energy. I've never been paid by Paray. We have a very, very small staff, and my business has done marketing for them from time to time, but very little. And like the CD you will see, we did, you know, just obviously for free. And so, you know, I'm sitting here saying that if we all work together and you prepare in the ways that if you have a family of five kids, well, then you are preparing in a different way than a couple who is retiring. So everybody has their own needs and energy, and we do not belittle that. Everyone has certain needs. But within your own purview and within your own ability to figure out where you stand in this energy paradigm and then start preparing for it. And in the meantime, you'll probably save a ton of money, and it'll be very satisfying at the same thing, at the same time. Putting in solar is a lot of fun, and it saves money, and it feels good every day when it's on your roof.
Well, that's such an important point. I mean, solar is very economic. I mean, there's installations going in all over the country, all over the world, frankly, where solar is being priced at 4 or 5 cents a kilowatt hour. The retail rate we're paying in Maine is 6 or 7 cents. So that's
right.
You're talking a 20% or 30% reduction in costs. I mean, we're talking pennies, and when we quote those numbers, so it doesn't sound like much, but it's a big percentage. But it feels great.
It feels great.
So I have solar on. I mean, we put solar on the house in New Hampshire.
Yep.
I've got. I don't know that I've ever mentioned this. I've got solar on my place. My place at the lake, and have not paid a bill to. I mean, I pay Bangor Hydro $7 a month, and have since 2011.
Right.
You know, I mean, 100% solar powered.
And it's basically you have this. It's a compound interest type of thing, but it's you know, there's a whole bunch of things about it that are inherently exciting. One is you're taking control of something in your life that until now you haven't been able to take control of. You pay the power company, you pay the oil company, and they bring you what they bring you for whatever price, and that's that. Here you're taking control of a portion of your life that it traditionally you weren't able to take control of. And so that in itself is just empowering. It's just wonderful. One of the stories I tell is when originally someone would come to your house and say, "You can't put in solar because those trees are in the way." And the attitude we took is, we're going to put in solar, and by the way, within a couple of weeks, you'll have those trees down.
Mm-hmm.
Because you will want to achieve more and more energy from that solar, and you'll be, it'll drive you crazy that you're being shaded. So we don't make anybody take any trees down. They do within a couple of weeks of when they see that their solar is being shaded. So it's an empowering thing to do that. And if you'll indulge me, I have this one 30-second story that is the compound interest. Is I put in a solar system on my house, and it saved me $600. I did it with an energy razor, which we'll get into in a minute. And so it cost me about $2,500 or so. So I put this in, saves me $600 a year. After 2 years, I buy a scooter for $1,200 because I've saved $1,200. Now I'm saving another $400 a year because I ride that thing everywhere and save $400 in fuel. Now I'm saving $1,000. After 5 years, I took $5,000 and I put in PV. And that has now saved me another $400 or $500 a year. So now I'm saving $1,500 a year. And in about 10 years from that, I'm about 3 years, maybe 4 years into that, in about another 11 years, I'm going to take $15,000, which is what I will have saved, and I will buy mini splits for, you know, thermal, and I will put in more solar, and I will pretty much be net zero. So what the average family spends $6,000 a year for, I will be getting for, you know, the cost of being associated with my utility, and that's it. And so that's the plan. And I gave that talk at a talk one time, and an estate planner came up to me and says, "You're forgetting one thing, and that is, if you don't need $6,000 a year when you retire, you don't need the $140,000 in your bank account to make the interest to pay that $6,000 every year. So you've just put about $200,000 in your pocket with that $2,500 investment." And it's all about just not spending the money in the first place.
Right.
And so every time you pay a bill to the oil company, it's that bill plus the 20% taxes you paid on that money. And with not spending the money in the first place, you have a depending on your tax rate, a 15 to 20% boost just by having it there in the first place. So and you don't have that future obligation, which is that $200,000 that you're going to. So it's on so many levels. It makes you feel good. It saves you money. It's something of your own. You're creating something on your own. Oh, it's on so many levels. It's just so much fun.
Right. And if you're heading towards retirement and you put solar on the house, you greatly reduce your costs going forward. One of the things we talk about on this show from time to time, this is me getting up on my personal soapbox, is the concept of payback. And people look at payback and for solar PV, for example, and they go, "Well, geez, it's 9 years. That means I'm going to spend a bunch of money and I'm not going to get anything back for 9 years," which is exactly the wrong way to look at it.
Correct.
If the payback is 9 years, meaning 100% of your money, you get it back in 9 years, that means the annual return on investment is 11%.
Unbelievable. It's better than the stock market has been in many, many years.
And you can sleep better. You don't have to worry about going down because it's clearly going to be there forever. So, again, it's a heck of an investment without a doubt. So we'll open the phones at this point. You kind of have a sense of where we're going here. Lots of details to talk about. But if you want to call in and talk with Peter about anything, ask him anything. The phone number is 866-625-9378. That's 625-WERU. And this is WERU 89.9 in Blue Hill, 99.9 in Bangor, and everywhere in the solar system at WERU.org. I teach planetary science, and so I have to do the solar system plug. We also have some pledges that have come in since we've been on the air, because this is the fundraising break. The phone number for that is 800-643-6273. And let's see if I can take a look at these slips here. So we have Harvey, I think it is, from Miami, Florida, Renewal. And he just pledged online. So he was listening at everywhere in the solar system, WERU.org. And there's a note here, sorry, that I can't quite fully read, but he did just pledge online. Kathleen from Owl's Head, a new member, called in during the public affairs show, says she moved here in 2012 and thinks this is the best radio station around and wants to thank the radio station. So thank you for all of those. And again, I'll just make the plug that I also donated on my way in this morning and bumped my donation up just in case Congress and the President zero fund public broadcasting.
Steve, if I can jump in here for just a second to let everybody know, this is John in the control room. All those folks you just mentioned, as well as yourself, myself as a contributor are going into the watering can for a little book called On Tyranny, 20 Lessons from the 20th Century by Timothy Snyder. This is a very small little volume, but it's packed full of really wise thoughts about the current situation politically and what we should do about it so we don't repeat history. Just a little thought on potential donors getting involved because of this. Get your name into the watering can for On Tyranny and call now at that number, 1-800-643-6273, to make that possible.
I think the names are literally in a watering can. I think I saw that out there somewhere. But John, do take my name out of there because I work here, so to speak, and so we should let somebody else be eligible for those kinds of gifts. All right, so our guest here today is Peter Adams from New Hampshire, and he is the co-founder and co-director of the Plymouth Area Renewable Energy Initiative, which we've nibbled at here but haven't really gotten to. So, Peter, let's launch into the you've talked about the why of the Plymouth Area Renewable Energy Initiative, that basically you guys just felt you needed to make a difference and you need to help us move past the peak oil problem. I might add here that the good news is that renewable energy is actually one of the major reasons that's keeping the fossil fuel costs down. Everybody says, geez, gas and oil are cheap. Why would I want to put renewables on? Well, if we don't continue to put renewables on, and they continue to have what has been a monopoly for 100 years, that's where peak oil pricing can kick in and be a real problem. If we have the renewables being a competition for that, we actually can talk about the concept not of peak oil, but of peak oil demand, which is
right,
a new concept
right
out there. And so that's all the more reason why we all need to be doing our part in the renewable energy business. But onto PERE, Plymouth Area Renewable Energy Initiative. Tell us, again, you've given us a little bit about the why.
Right.
Tell us the who and the how.
So we started back in 2003, 2004. We became a not-for-profit organization. And we were given a small grant by the Million Solar Roofs Program. If you remember that was... who was in office in 2003? Was that Obama? There was a program called the Million Solar Roofs Program
that came out of the Department of Energy.
Out of the Department of Energy, right. And we were given a small seed grant to put together an idea of what we were going to do and how we were going to do it. We decided to make a membership organization where you become a member of PERE. And you would join a network of people, basically. And it was what we tried to do is bring people together. Like, we started having these things called energy exchanges, and they would be on a Friday night, and you'd have a potluck dinner, and you'd have a speaker, and you'd have some food and some alcoholic beverages if you preferred that, and you would just talk about various aspects of energy and peak oil and various things. But the most dynamic part of this was when you'd break out and just sort of talk to people, you were amazed at how much expertise there was in a room of ordinary people on energy. And some people had put in certain types of boilers, and some people had put in certain types of solar. And so you would match these people. I'm thinking of this, those people over there were the ones that did that. You can go talk to them. And so we found we were developing this beautiful network of people that could help each other, neighbor helping neighbor, achieve, review and then achieve your goals for your energy future. And one of the things that came up that became one of our mainstays for quite a while and still is out there is the Energy Raiser. And the Energy Raiser model was based on barn raisings in the Amish community of Pennsylvania and Ohio. And it was, if we get a certain amount of expertise together and then a whole bunch of hands, can we put up a solar system in a day and eliminate the labor portion of this? And one of the things that happened that we found out very quickly, we're in a very rural area. And what we really wanted to do early on was educate the tradespeople on how to do this and get them excited about doing it and create a market for them. And we very quickly created a market, and we couldn't get any tradespeople to come up here and do it. We brought people from the southern part of the state that did solar, and they would come up, they'd do 5 or 6 site visits in a day, and then you'd never hear from them again. Because it was just too expensive for them to travel up here and do this. So we realized realized we had to do it on our own. And that's where the Energy Razor came out, where one member of ours said, hey, can you help me? And I said, sure, you help me, I'll help you. And that's where it began. And the first Energy Razor was held at my house. I had 27 people, you know, on the roof, on the ground, putting together a system that for thermal energy that none of us had ever seen before. And it took a long day, but by the end of the day, the sun was still shining, and we started making hot water in my basement. And it was so dynamic and so fun and so, you know, interesting that to date, I think we've done about 90 Energy Razors. And the interesting, I have to back up 1 second and say, we are a very organic organization. And I describe ourselves like those wind-up toys that you wind up and they used to go and hit a wall and then switch and then go the other way. And so if we hit a wall, we just move a different direction. And the Energy Razor was one of these things that just snowballed, and we just went with it. And you know, the one thing that was an interesting offshoot of this is we'd have plumbers and electricians coming and giving their time on a Saturday because they knew that the 50 people that were going to come and watch us do this wanted solar but didn't want to do an Energy Razor. And so their cards would fling out of their wallets, here, I'm the guy to call. So from that, the Energy Razor, 90 Energy Razors, we have also achieved about 200 to 300 professional installations because of the networking between professionals and property owners and the proper information flow. So it's been the number I'm using right now based on, you know, if everything's working smoothly with all these systems, we've got a million two in 8 towns, $1,200,000 that does not leave our area every year to go to Saudi Arabia or some other country, Venezuela, to buy oil. That's a huge tax. That's a huge return.
That's the savings that is, that per A systems have offset. Is that what
correct.
You're saying?
Correct. Right. And that's so that's like a shot in the arm for our communities, and you know it's growing every year. Right. So it's a compound interest thing.
And I have to say, yeah. having had one at my house, just you know having people there that don't necessarily know how to do plumbing, but are there. You know, sanding and cleaning copper pipe before somebody who knows what they're doing does it is just rewarding. I mean, you've got a flurry of people around, and it is incredibly fun, as you just said. We do have a caller on the line, so let's just take a quick one for that. Al from Hamden, you are on the air.
Hello. I'm calling as a consumer, potential consumer, and my question is, what's the failure rate of panels? Getting back to the beginning of your conversation when you talked about a $6,000 installation, et cetera, what's the failure rate of these panels? What's their obsolescence? What's their lifetime? I mean, after 10 years, am I looking at a technology that is seriously outdated? Do I have to invest another $6,000 for another 10 years?
Al, are you talking about solar thermal or solar photovoltaic?
Photovoltaic.
Okay. So I look at that a couple different ways. One is the manufacturers right now are putting very, very long warranties on their products. Your weakest component in this is the real heavy electronics, which is the inverter in your basement or the inverter on the roof. And there's two different ways to go about that. One is a microinverter that sits behind every panel, and they cost $170 per unit and sit right behind the panel. So everything that comes in your house is AC, alternating current. Or there's a string inverter in your basement, which can be a couple $1,000s. But still, the manufacturers for all of that are putting 10 and 20-year warranties on these things because they know they're going to last. The panels last for a very, very long time. So look at military installations. There's the story I love to tell is up, I think it's in Orono, I think it's up near you, when Ronald Reagan took the solar panels off the roof of the White House. Now, when was that? 1980, because he said we don't want them here, that Carter had put up. He basically gave them away, and I believe it's a Maine school, I think it's Orono, sent trucks down to Washington and brought them back, and they're still in operation in Orno. Mm-hmm. And so it's actually,
It's actually at Unity College, and they aren't actually on the installed right now, but they were installed for many years. And so.
Yeah, and so I got the name wrong. But basically, they last for a very long time. So the second thing about obsolescence is this. I look at it like I had a a small computer, like a what was the number? The
Apple II?
It's just like an old Mac or whatever, and you know, an old processor. And it was a computer that lasted years and years and years. Now, I did not buy that computer because I thought it was going to be obsolete. I bought that computer because it could do something for me right now. And that I have computers in my office that are 30 years old that are still doing certain things and still working in certain ways. And so when you put this on your roof, it's still going to make power in 30 years. You might just be able to add to that in 10 or 20 years and use half the amount of space to do it. And that's really what's happening with solar PV is, you know, the panels for the size, the efficiency is happening in size. That you can fit more in a small square foot area that produces more, but the 3 or 4 kilowatts you're going to put up today is not going to be obsolete 30 years from now. It'll still put out the same amount of power it did now, but you might be able to in the future add to that system with a few more panels that take up less space and give you equal amounts, and now you're totally off the grid. We did not buy a 386 computer or whatever years ago because we thought it would be obsolete. The 386 computer was able to do something for us and do it for a very, very long time. And then comes Pentium and all these new computers that the 386 computer still works. We don't want to use it anymore, but with a solar panel, you will use it. You'll use it until it. So, I mean, what we say is 20 years is a good lifespan, and anything over that, which many, many panels will do, is achievable. And, so count on the 20 years.
And Al, we've had people call in when we've had people from the solar industry on this show and ask, well, what about the disposal of solar panels? Is that an issue, and what are the environmental issues there? And people look around the table and they go, well, you know what? We aren't disposing of any because the ones that were built in the 70s are still producing 70 or 80% of the electricity that they were designed to build.
Right.
One of the beauties of solar is that it's the only renewable energy out there that doesn't have any moving parts.
As
Peter said, it could be that you replace the inverters, but basically the panels are there probably for the rest of your life.
Right. There's a system we put in on a farm out in a field. And things do happen, and they, unfortunately, and it got hit by lightning. And there are lightning suppressors everywhere, but lightning can be a very, very powerful thing. And it blew out a very, very small diode within the panels. The insurance company put the new panels up. We took the old panels down, and we've had a number of people in basements over the last 2 years replacing those diodes with a little soldering gun and whatever, and those panels are being donated to not-for-profits that, like the Circle Camp and other places that can benefit from these. We're giving them away to small systems on not-for-profits. So even getting hit by lightning, these things are very robust.
Right. So we have another caller, John from Belfast. You are on the air.
Hi. I've been listening to your show with great interest. I was particularly interested when they're talking about peak oil earlier, and I just wanted to bring up the point about industrial hemp. You know, we voted for legalization of recreational marijuana last year in Maine, and that's wonderful and all, but ultimately I would like to see us bring commercial hemp back into production, because virtually anything that you can make from oil you can make from hemp, and it's of course, you know, an unlimited resource. And I was, just to give you a for instance, I was in Nebraska in 2012, during literally the worst drought they'd had during 100 years. And cornfields were brown and wheat fields were brown. Everything was dying from lack of water. And in the midst of all this drought and the kill off from the lack of water, there were huge stands of wild hemp left over from the 20s and 30s, where it was grown commercially till 1938. And these plants were green and vibrant because they're weeds, and they're drought-tolerant, and they know how to survive. So anyway, that's just my two cents for the day. But I would like to encourage everybody out there to investigate and learn about and promote commercial hemp because, as I say, virtually anything that can be made from oil can be made from hemp. And that's my comment, and I'll get off here and let you guys go about your day.
And, you know, I basically I love the concept of all of the above. You know, I mean the ability to one of the articles I read years ago that said that, you know, there's 200 years of natural gas in our ground that we can pump out and you know over the next year. So 200 years of natural gas. So what are we worrying about? Well, the fact of the matter is that if we only use natural gas, we've got about 25 years of natural gas in the ground. And so, in other words, if we were to take away oil and everything else, coal and everything else that we use, there's only not 200 years. So at the rate we're using natural gas, we have 200 years left. If we were to all of a sudden rely on that, it would be 25 years. So the more things we can add to offset oil, the better. And I mean, look at algae, look at all these different things that algae, you know, grows in any pond. And I guess, yeah, if you're going to make it industrialized, you have to do it in a controlled atmosphere. But still, it grows, you know, just give it a little sunlight and a little carbon dioxide, and algae will grow. So all these things are possibilities. And
you to follow up on your comment about that gas is, you know, if we went entirely to it, the gas would run out much faster. Kind of
exactly.
two thoughts there. A similar number for nuclear energy I've seen has been about 40 years.
Right.
If we went entirely to nuclear, so that's not a long-term solution. And the other one is on gas. The fracking wells, fracking has its own environmental footprint that's fairly controversial. Fracking wells peak out in a matter of weeks.
Right.
It's
right.
an addiction to do
right.
gas, and you have to keep drilling more and more wells and injecting more and more stuff into the ground, and so it continues to be a problem.
There's an amazing book called, I'm going to get it wrong here, it's The Boom or Boom. I read one, and it was about Keystone Pipeline, and so I got halfway through. Someone recommended the book, and I got halfway through, and I said, this isn't about fracking, but it was still a fascinating book. But there's two books called The Boom or Just Boom, and one of them is about fracking. And the fact of the matter is this book points out that we're fracking about 150 new wells a day to keep pace with what we've got right now,
right.
just
right.
to keep pace. And so that is not a long-term solution.
It sure isn't. We've got another phone call here. Chris from Union, you are on the air.
Thank you. Peter, my question revolves around the fundraiser and the energy raiser.
Mm-hmm.
And wondered if WERU last week mentioned that they use about $2,400 a month in electricity. What would be the... Would one of your organizations be able to put together a plan for WERU to develop a solar site, either on site or off site, possibly someplace else that a listener might provide, and then with volunteers from the listening audience coming and working as a solar energy raiser, go ahead and build out the project.
Absolutely, I'm gonna answer that in two ways. One is we have a new program called that we're doing right now called Solar Share. And what Solar Shares is a program where we're matching up with the New Hampshire Electric Co-op, which is our utility here, and we're going to raise the money to put up about 125 kilowatts of power. And then the power that we receive from that will go to low-income people. They will not get a check. They will get some energy reduced off their bill. And so they'll get kilowatt hours, in a sense. And so we're in the process of looking for land for that. So that is an amazing donation. So talk about your station. That is, if someone wants to donate land for a 20-year lease, for instance, they're not going to lose the land. They're just going to lease it. That would be an amazing donation to the furthering the cause of the radio station. Now, the Energy Razor, understand that with PV can be dangerous. It's electricity. And so when we get to the Energy Razor stage of the PV as opposed to the thermal, certain things electricians have to do, and we totally understand that. But racking, you know, digging the ditches to put in the footings, all that stuff can be done by volunteers. So, yes, I mean, there's a challenge that you could take up and learn from us. Whether we would come over there and do it, probably not. But we can teach you how to do it. We can guide you on doing it. But those type of projects are just, they're fun. People come and bring food and bring what expertise they have. The general contracting needs to be done by an electrician, but you find an electrician that's interested in helping out, and you can drastically reduce the cost of the system.
And Chris, that's such a good question, and that ultimately is the reason that I invited Peter on the show, because if there are people out there who would like to do something like this for a radio station or a school or their municipal building, we would love to help foster that type of approach. And again, I'm going to take this back to the Mid-Maine Sustainability Coalition and see if we can do a little action there as well. So as a reminder, this is Pledge Week. The number for pledging, careful now, this is not the number to call in for the radio program, this program. Pledge number is 800-643-6273. The number for the program is 866-625-9378. So please pledge if you can. If you've saved some money through listening to this program and something that you've implemented at home, give us a bit of that money if you would. Already having pledged during this program is Kathleen from Owl's Head. Thank you very much, Kathleen, and Harvey from Miami, Florida, not to mention some guy named Steve, who is the host of the show, who also has donated.
Steve, a little additional information for you. Peter, you mentioned the boom, and I just looked it up. It's the boom, how fracking ignited the American energy revolution and changed the world, and it's
Thank
by
you.
Russell Gold and Patrick Lawford.
Fabulous. Thank you. I had a wonderful time with the other book as well, but I got 3/4 of the way through and I realized that I hadn't seen one well fracked yet. So. Mm.
And the you mentioned briefly the pipeline issue, and of course the Keystone Pipeline was controversially denied by the State Department during the last administration. It's been approved by the current administration, and it's likely to die because of economics, because
right.
renewables have made that extraction of gooey stuff in Canada non-economic.
Well, here's one funny little fact that really doesn't mean much in between here or there, but 9,000 megawatts will be lost in production on the 21st of August when we have a solar eclipse. 9,000 megawatts. That's how much solar has been put in across this country. That 1 hour that we basically see a shadow on our on the ground as opposed to the sunshine when we have this solar eclipse, 9,000 megawatts of production will be lost.
So is that,
is that
megawatt minutes? Is that what we need?
That's megawatt hours.
Megawatt hours, okay.
So in other words, 1 hour over my system I will lose about 3 kilowatts.
Right, and that's just people in the path of the
exactly.
Right. So
exactly.
We have another call here. I think it was David from Brooklyn. David from Brooklyn. Go ahead, David.
Hi. Thanks for the really, I think, a really great show. My attendance has been really spotty as I run around jumping in and out of the car doing things. And I just wanted to make sure that you have covered the case. You haven't. Maybe you could, for me, or even if you have, for the people who might be in my similar situation. It's all well good, just money, but it seems so often you need to have money in order to save it. And I know you're talking about the fundraising. I wonder if you've got built into your wonderful system a way that somebody who can't afford a solar array off the bat can somehow or other borrow against the future so as to have at least a minimal insulation.
Absolutely, and so here's there are a whole bunch of different there's a whole bunch of different models out there, and one of them is you put out a check for $5,000, $10,000, $15,000, and you buy your system. A lot of people cannot do that. And so the second way that I talk about is with the microinverters, which are an inverter for each panel. A panel costs about, a 300-watt panel can cost around $375, and the microinverter costs about $160, $170. A little bit of racking you do yourself, and basically for about $500, $600, you're making 300 watts of power every time the sun shines. So you can do that little by little, add on year after year if you want to. So you can do it incrementally. And the third way to do it is what a lot of the big companies are doing is PPAs, which are they basically put up a solar system on your roof and then buy the power from you. And so they're using your roof, you're getting the power, and they're basically it's called a power purchase agreement. And so it's an innovative way for them basically to own the system for a while. Sometimes it's always their system. Sometimes by the end of this agreement, it's yours. But it's a way to get solar up. A cousin of mine did it in Baltimore, and they came by and they said, "This is what you will pay for power for the next 20 years, and we're just going to put solar on your roof, and we're gonna charge you the money for the power." But it's basically you lock in to a price for the next 20 years, which is what you're doing with solar, and you have absolutely no upfront cost whatsoever. Mm-hmm. So I know what's Elon Musk's company is. Why am I drawing a blank? But there's a bunch of big companies out there that that are offering this, and they put it up, and then so there's absolutely no upfront cost to you. But you still get all the benefits.
There are a few other options that I want to mention here in a moment, including a couple that, Peter, you wouldn't know about for in Maine specifically. But, David, I think you called back. Are you still on the line?
Yeah, I've got a couple. One really quick question. The $600 option, that's exactly what I'm thinking about. I'm off the grid. And
okay.
So anything that involves being linked to the grid is functionally and politically totally unfeasible for
okay.
me. So then
you're just
if you're off.
So do you have any solar now?
No.
Okay, so
just got a cabin in the woods.
So do you have a battery system?
No, we got little charge it up. Japanese lanterns and
I love you.
Generator.
So here's
it's
the thing
enough,
is
though.
Is anything you add. So you don't even need the inverter if you're DC. So if you're DC and your batteries are DC, you're just going to get a solar panel and a charge controller. So that you don't blow up your battery. You know what I mean? The charge controller makes sure your battery.
Yeah.
So you can add, you just have to make sure the voltages are right. But, anybody that sells solar can help you with that. And you put up.
Wonderful.
There's a book I read years ago about a guy who bought a place on the top of a mountain in the Ozarks. And he basically built it with DC in mind, but it was going to cost him $500,000 to get solar in, or get the utility into him. So he put up one solar panel, and all of a sudden he was watching the Super Bowl. You know what I mean? When everybody down the valley was in an ice storm and all the power got knocked out. So, he said, "I want this." So we put a panel in for that. I want that. And what I call them is islands of power. You want something to run a refrigerator. Well, put enough power in for that, and that's what it does. So you can add a solar panel. Just think of it as a DC generator with a certain rating. That's all it is. So if you're charging any batteries ever, the solar panel will do the same thing.
And David, a couple of other comments here. Efficiency Maine offers an energy loan for any type of thing that you want to propose to them, but they also have the energy loan has been something they've been doing for a while. This year, I believe, is when they started, 2017, they also started a rebate for energy purchases for low-income homeowners, and I believe the low income part of it is based on the value of your property. So you don't have to do income tax or anything like that. And it sounds like if you're a cabin in the woods, you're probably going to qualify. So I'm going to call it a rebate because it's a relatively new program that I haven't actually looked into myself yet to know more about it. But you might check into that. For other people out there thinking about these sorts of things, Peter mentioned power purchase agreement. That's a great model for any number of nonprofits and businesses like that. Conceivably, it could be done on a homeowner's level. The more common homeowner version of a power purchase agreement is a lease from a company, and there are a number of companies in Maine that do leases. And basically, so you get it up front at no cost, and then you get a discount on your electricity. So it's hard to lose on that one. Also, think about building if you're in the business of refinancing or building a new home, build your darn solar PV right into your mortgage because the payment on it is going to be less than the amount of electricity you get back out. So again, it's a no-lose situation. And then the final one is a PACE loan, and I don't want to take the time to try to explain that because we don't have enough time left in the show, but it stands for Property Assessed Clean Energy. It looks like it says Ivar there, so we have one more caller here, and I've from Swan's Island. Hang on a second, Ivar. A PACE loan is something that you actually do through a bank, but you also get involved with your town, and I guess the shortest version of it is the payment on that loan, by definition, because by the definition of what the PACE loan is less than the amount of electricity that you get back out of it. So it's a win-win situation as well. There's multiple ways to finance these things, even for low-income people, which it kind of deflates the governor's argument that it's only for the wealthy. So let's see if we can sneak that call in. It looked like it was Ivar from Swan's Island.
I'm still here.
Go ahead.
Hi, we got very excited about it also with the peak oil thing. And so we decided to do something. So we put in solar hot water. Mm-hmm. And then we should put in just a very small PV system that just charges our cell phones, keeps a few LED lights going, and turns the radio on. So it's been very useful. We've had it for like 12 years, I think.
Yep.
It cost about $1,000. We had to put in a very small panel to run, you know, just a couple circuits in a little circuit breaker.
Yep.
So that added to it.
So we're calling those islands of power, and
yeah.
So on my house, I've got about 9 islands of power. The solar panel that runs all my external LED lights, so I never have to turn any lights on. They just come on and they come off. The island of power that I have in my shed, which is a 20-watt solar panel, and runs stuff and has a little inverter in case I need to use AC out there. And now a lot of people are doing what we're calling mini off-grid systems, which are systems built into your house. But just like you say, you just designated to just a few breakers in your house. So that outlet there are the ones that you're going to use that are going to be solar. So it's really versatile. I mean, you can do a lot or a little, or you can do whatever you want. And experimentation is really fun.
Yeah, we found it works for neighbors. The power went out, and you know, ours kept going. You know, or we just had enough to, you know, run the radio, get around the house, do anything we have to do. So
exactly.
Some of my colleagues asked me about, you know, generator, and I said, well, my generator never goes off, you know.
Right, and during Hurricane Irene, everyone was at my house watching TV.
Yeah.
Because everyone else's power was out.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for that call, Ivor. We've got 1 minute, and I just want to share another comment that relates to that last one, and that is running your spotlights outside with solar power.
Yep.
I mean, you can go to Home Depot or Lowe's, not making a plug for either one of them, and get one for $50 or $60. I've got some that have lasted for 10 years. Those lights use a lot of power if you plug them into the system. And you can run them for free,
yep.
And they're motion activated, and they work incredibly good. And I'll show you one more comment here. Yep, there's the music. I guess I don't have time for one more comment. Peter, we didn't get nearly far enough down the line as we wanted to, and so I would love to have you back, and I will touch base with you soon about
Great.
That, about having you back. So,
it was a lot of fun.
Thanks so much. The guest
Thank
has been
much.
Peter Adams from the Plymouth Area Renewable Energy Initiative in New Hampshire. This has been Power for the People. Melisandre and Wednesdays on the Wing is up next. See you next month.
Support for WERU comes from our listeners and from the Strand Theater in Rockland, presenting the French pop
Latin, and jazz act Banda Magda live in concert on Saturday, August 12th at 7:30 p.m. Tickets and information at rocklandstrand.com or 594-0070.
Tune in to Writers Forum Thursday morning, August 10th at 10 o'clock, when my guests will be Lee Smith and Deborah Joy Corey. Both award-winning authors will discuss their recent memoirs, Dime Store, and...